Blog Talk Radio.
Okay. Good morning.
Pour yourself a cup of tea.
There it goes. Good morning. I guess my intro didn't want to come on today, which is fine. Good morning. It's Randy Fine. A Fine Time for Healing. I am your show host. And today is Free Advice Friday, the day that I take your calls and answer your questions. I look forward to you calling in. Don't be shy. The number is 319. No, that's not the right number. Okay. The number for you to call if you want to ask me a question is 424-220-1801. The number is 424-220-1801. That is your call-in number. And I will be doing this show for, you can call in up until about 11:30 Eastern Time. So today I wanted to talk to you about the family. The family when there is narcissism in it, especially with narcissistic parents. This is very relevant to me right now because my family is going through crazy stuff. And my mother is 90, my father is 95. So it doesn't end just because they get older. And it just so happens that my parents both have their mental faculties completely. So sometimes if the parent, if you have a narcissistic parent who has dementia or something like that, sometimes they soften up. Not always, but sometimes they do. In this case, it has not happened. It is probably escalated. Now, I have gone no contact with my parents, but I am in contact with my sisters who were in contact with my parents, and so I've heard the craziness. And I really don't want to hear the craziness. It just so happened that there was a crisis that came through and I found out about it. So normally I don't listen to anything about them, and that is how I keep peace in my life. But just knowing what is going on has made me so crazy and confused in my mind. I don't like it. It's stressful. So I really want to talk about this today. I'm sure there are many of you out there that are currently going through this at any stage of connection with your family. You may still be having contact, you may be limited contact, you may be no contact, but I wanted to talk about the family. So let's, you know, because sometimes we get confused as to what a family is, and we say, well, how can I abandon my family? So a family is a group of people that are committed to caring for one another. They're committed to loving one another, supporting one another, protecting one another. The cohesiveness of that group, the family group, relies on an implicit promise of honesty, truth, loyalty, dependability, altruism among all its members. There are some families that function well in this regard, and there are some families that do not. And the families that do not are said to be dysfunctional. Now, the fact that a family argues or has problems from time to time does not make it dysfunctional. It's perfectly normal for families to encounter obstacles and for there to be conflicts among its members. When we characterize a family as dysfunctional, it's because of the emotional pain and the mistrust and the confusion that is prevalent among its members. And every family ruled by a narcissistic parent or parents is clearly dysfunctional. And the home life of a child living in this type of environment is chaotic and confusing, loveless, volatile, unpredictable for certain. The mind games narcissistic parents play with their children cause a lifetime of damage. I'm experiencing this with myself, my sisters. It just doesn't end. A healing can take place in some cases, but the confusion and what happens to us as a result of being in this family does not completely end. Children who are in narcissistic families are deprived of the basic building blocks that create a healthy self-esteem, autonomy, individuality. These losses impair a child's ability to adjust to life in a healthy way. So if you think of a building and you think of a foundation, the stronger the foundation under the building, the higher the building can build, and the more durable that building will be. And it is the same with children of narcissistic parents. And after being in so much chaos and drama constantly in these households, children are saddled with a lifetime of emotional struggles. And that is why recovery from this kind of abuse is so difficult. Not to say that it is impossible, because you can recover from it and you can move on and have a very healthy life. But there's always going to be a piece that's going to stay within you. And it may come out from time to time as emotion. It may come out from time to time as physical ailments. But we never get completely rid of it. And as I said, that doesn't mean that we can't have a very happy life. It's just that when these things come up, we have to recognize them and understand where it came from. So, from the outside looking in, the narcissistic family appears to be like any other, quote-unquote, normal family. And that's not an accident. It's perfectly designed, purposely designed by the narcissistic parent to appear that way so no one will interfere with their reign of terror. What goes on behind the closed doors? And what our friends and our relatives and our neighbors see are entirely different. So this is maddening, because no one believes what we say, no one understands what we're experiencing, and no one comes to our rescue because they cannot see it. As children, we are conditioned to believe that the way our family functions is normal, and that there is nothing unusual about the behavior of our narcissistic parent. We know no other way for a family to operate. Our home life might feel off-kilter, and we may be unhappy in that family unit, but we don't know why. Because we've either been brainwashed into thinking the way we do, or we're so in fear that we can think no other way. Again, this is Free Advice Friday. If you'd like to call in and share, the number is 424-220-1801. Another thing that keeps us imprisoned in this family unit is that it's constantly reinforced to us not to do anything that may potentially make the family look bad. What will people think? This is what the narcissistic parent says. Don't do it. What will people think? no one is allowed to know about the narcissistic family's problem or the dysfunctional dynamics of the relationships within it. Children are admonished not to share the secrets existing inside the four walls they live in. They're always supposed to show this face to the world and pretend that everything is fine. And we're so conditioned to do that as children that we really don't think anything other than that it's fine, or that it's normal, or that it's just what a family is. But the narcissist wants this idealized, perfect family image. It's everything to the narcissist. And the parents will insist that nothing is wrong with the family and that the children show a perfect face to the world. This was my family. This may be your family. If you have a narcissistic parent, this is what is going on or what went on in your family. And it is very confusing. Because when we think of family, we think of cohesiveness. We think of loyalty. We think of dedication. But that does not exist in these families. The entire family has to revolve around the narcissistic parent and the parent's needs and their whims and their desires. Children are not permitted to have their own feelings or needs, or even question the needs of the parent. And as far as boundaries go, physical, emotional, there are few, if any, in the narcissistic family. Because narcissistic parents believe they own the rights to their children and the children's lives forever. They feel entitled to know and to comment on everything their children think and do, no matter how old they get. The pain comes from not having boundaries established, and as adult children, we will forever be subject to this violating invasion of our privacy. And that doesn't have to be. As adults, we get to define our lives and our privacy and what we wish to share, but sometimes we're so used to or conditioned to share everything that we just do that. And every time we do it, we're sorry we did. And sometimes we do that. Sometimes we share and everything is fine. But out of nowhere, at some other point, it will come back at us. The narcissistic parent uses everything we say against us. You know, it's interesting, but narcissistic parents, actually any narcissist, they lie as effortlessly as we tell the truth. And even the family history that they share, we can't believe what they say until it's authenticated. Some of the stories are part truth, part fiction. And then they're repeated over and over throughout the years until they take on a life of their own. And then at some point, we discover that they weren't true. And it is mind-blowing. And the realities within these families shift precariously. There is no reliability or predictability for any of the members in a narcissistic family. What seems real never is. And the rules are ever-changing. So let's talk about the roles within the family. We hear a lot about this, but when there is more than one child in the family, narcissistic parents assign them each roles. Only one child can be favored at a time, and this actually holds true for grandchildren. Only one grandchild will be favored at a time. But the roles can be reassigned or switched at the parent's will. if there is only one child in the family, that child may have to play all the roles. So the three roles that are given in narcissistic families are the golden child, scapegoat, and lost or invisible child. And when I emphasize the word given, these are the roles that the parent gives the children. These are assigned. And the golden child is the parent's chosen one. The golden child is seen as an extension of the narcissistic parent. This child lives vicariously through, the parent lives vicariously through the child. And the golden child represents the parent's perfect image of self. This child is either physically beautiful or has a talent that the parent finds impressive, but it's always something that gives that parent bragging rights. This child is not loved, although it seems like the child is loved. They are chosen for exploitation. And so the other children in the family may think this favorite child has a wonderful life and is loved. But that's not true. And this child knows it because they're constantly exploited. The golden child can do no wrong. If the parent finds fault with the child, which is a perfect reflection of the parent's own self-image, that would have to mean that something is wrong with that parent. So he or she elevates this perfect specimen that they created to this level of omnipotence higher than their own. The child is idolized as if that child is godlike. But unlike a god or whatever that is omnipotent, or a goddess who reigned free and unencumbered, this child is a possession. So the narcissistic parent tries to engulf and enmesh with the golden child as if the two of them were one. There are no boundaries between parent and child established. This makes it very difficult for the child to separate or to form an identity. What's interesting is when I went into therapy many, many years ago, because I was in so much pain and I really couldn't stand the sight of my mother. I didn't know why. And whenever she was with me, the life was sucked out of me. And I didn't know why. Because I was her favorite. She loved me. She told me she loved me. She told me she couldn't live without me. So when I went into therapy, and I was in a great deal of emotional pain, and my therapist told me this was a boundary issue, I looked at her like she was crazy. But as we worked together, and I began to see that I was completely enmeshed with my parents, I had no self other than what I had with them. So what was interesting, and this is really how it came out, and I was able to see it in a visual way, is she had me draw a picture of me and my parents and how I felt we were connected. And if you know what a Venn diagram is two interlocking circles, and then the center is where the commonality is. Well, I drew myself interlocked with my parents. So I didn't have a thought. I didn't have anything that didn't involve sharing with my parents or wanting approval from them for what I was thinking or what I was doing. And that was a huge wake-up call. So let's talk about the scapegoat child. Life is very difficult for this child. So where the golden child can do no wrong, this child can do no right. And though only one child at a time can be a golden child, some families have more than one scapegoat child. so, as I said, these roles can shift. The scapegoat child is considered a bad seed. This child is seen as inferior. The scapegoat child's primary job is to carry the shame and anger of the narcissistic parent. This child is blamed for everything that goes wrong in the family. And the narcissistic parent is unrelentingly critical, cruel, and abusive to this child. Not only is this child unappreciated, the child is humiliated in front of other family members, often called crazy, and made to feel unaccepted. And since the scapegoat child is usually the most truthful, well-meaning, and personally sacrificing member of the family, that child is forever getting hurt. However, the child will remain authentic no matter how many times it is used and abused by the parent. Narcissistic parents see scapegoat children as having no needs of their own, but they are expected to do all the caring. It's this crazy, crazy dichotomy. And the entire childhood of the scapegoat is spent trying to live up to the expectations of the parent, which they never can. That will prove futile every time. That child is never good enough. What's interesting about the scapegoat child is that they tend to fare the best in life out of all three roles, because they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what they do. They're going to get criticized and ridiculed. So often they're very rebellious within the family. They're the ones who speak up and call the parents on all these things because they have nothing to lose. The golden child has everything to lose. The scapegoat child has nothing to lose. And so they are very vocal most of their life. And because they're very vocal, that saves them in a sense. Doesn't mean that they live a life of peace and happiness until they figure this out. No, they don't, because they were branded losers as children. And that loser feeling sticks with them, and they will live up to that or down to that. So no matter what that child accomplishes, and no matter how old that child becomes, it will always feel like a loser, which is very, very sad. So healing is important, and I'm bringing up the roles of these children because it's important to understand that you must heal the particular child or children that you, the roles that you played, you must heal them, or you will carry them into everything that you do. So let's talk about the lost or invisible child. This child does not receive praise, and they don't receive blame from the parent. Basically, the child is treated as if it doesn't exist. The invisible child is the forgotten one, the neglected one, the one who is unrecognized. And the narcissistic parent is not the least bit interested or aware of this child's needs. The parent has absolutely no use for this child. So there's varying ways that the child is treated. So the child, some children are sent to school with old and dirty clothes, outdated, mismatched. or unruly hair, or the parent may fail to teach this child proper hygiene. In some cases, the child may not receive the adequate medical or dental care that they need. But what's interesting is narcissistic parents who really want to conceal this abuse, really covert parents like my mother, they provide just enough care for this child to keep others from noticing that they're neglecting it. And because the invisible child is treated as if that child is a nobody, this child expects nothing, nor asks for anything. He or she is the quietest sibling in the family because no one is listening anyway. The golden child gets what he or she wants without trying. The scapegoat child is busy saying, "Look at me." But the invisible child's voice is lost to all the parents' other focuses. And so this child, for self-preservation, will withdraw into herself or himself and shut down as if they are hiding from the world. They escape into their own mind. But because of this, this withdrawal, healthy social interactions are missed out on. Friendships are few, if any. The child has this feeling of never fitting in, and they carry this feeling into adulthood. Invisible children find it difficult to let others into their world. They don't develop a healthy connectedness to other people or to society. They become very independent, lonely and isolated, but very self-sufficient. And these children are prone to severe depression. They may easily fall prey to substance abuse, eating disorders, addictive behaviors. It's really tough to feel invisible. There's an article on my website, and I can't, let me see what it is. I just actually sent this to somebody, so I'm going to, all right, I'll get back to it. I'll tell you the name of the article. Oh, here we go. Invisible Trauma of Childhood Abuse. Check it out, because it's really interesting. If you're an invisible child, it's very on point with this. But there was a experiment done with children, with babies, who were not mirrored. So, in other words, when we're little babies, you know, we smile, the parent smiles back at us. But in this particular study, the parent had a stone face. They never responded to the child. And it created such anxiety in the baby, or these babies, however many they, you know, did this experiment on. The parent never mirrored back the emotion. And this is extremely damaging. So now I want to talk about the four additional roles that children adopt in these homes. So before I was talking about the roles that the parents assign, now I'm talking about the adaptation of these children and how they choose to function in these families. And so the four I'm going to talk about are the hero responsible child, the caretaker placator child, the mascot or clown child, and the mastermind manipulator child. And children can adopt more than one of these roles. Children who are only children will take on a variety of these emotional adaptations. So so the hero responsible child is often, but not always, the oldest sibling. This child becomes overly conscientious and independent. The child assumes the role of a responsible parent at an inappropriately young age. And with a perfectionistic nature, this hero child strives to achieve the highest level of success recognized as impressive by her family unit. She's the perfect student. He's the best athlete. She's the most talented. This child is a shining example of what outsiders assume could only be attributed to perfect parenting. The job of this child is to mask the true dysfunction of her family to the outside world. And since the hero child relies on outside approval as his compass for success, and his worth is always defined by others, nothing he accomplishes ever feels good enough. Nothing others do is good enough either. She does not like to engage the help of others and tends to be controlling because she believes no one can complete a task as well as she can. As an adult, the hero is likely to continue being successful in all that person does, though that success will never create happiness. So that was the hero responsible child. Now let's talk about the caretaker placator child. This is the rescuer of the family. This is the child that manages all the ever-changing, explosive moods in her family. The child's talents are listening, supporting, nurturing, counseling. This is me. This child has a sensitive, calm, and understanding nature. His gentle soul cannot tolerate conflicts or pandemonium or discord. When the family upsets arise, and this child senses that it's about to, he immediately jumps into pacifying mode. This is what I did for many, many, many years. The caretaker asks for no emotional support for herself, though the child is a very sensitive child and needs it the most. This child does not know how to get her own needs met, so she avoids them and focuses on the needs of her family. This is the pleaser child. Her self-worth is defined by what she can do for others. And as an adult, this caretaker child is likely to choose a career in a helping or caring profession, since this is where he or she is most practiced and comfortable. But while others greatly benefit from this compassionate nature, this child will always find it difficult to accept and meet his or her own needs. And as a person, as an adult, they are easily taken advantage of, likely to suffer the doormat syndrome as well. So the doormat syndrome is where everybody steps on you. Codependency, where you do and do and do and do for others and you never receive it back and people walk all over you. Another role is the mascot clown child. This is the one who brings humor to the family. These are the comedians that we hear about that had very sad lives. The mascot clown child. Sometimes, usually, not often, the youngest child in the family. And this child, it's interesting, takes responsibility for the emotional well-being of the family. But they do it in a different way than the caretaker does. The mascot is the social director, and the mascot is the one who is constantly kidding and clowning around as a diversion tactic. divert the family away from its prevailing pain and anger. He is the one the family counsel on to lighten the mood and make them feel better. So it appears to people on the outside looking in that his happy-go-lucky attitude, the problems just roll off his back. But you see, his resilience is only a defense mechanism. The mascot is deflecting the reality of his tragic circumstances, and he is expressing his pain through comic relief. This child is a cut-up at home, the class clown in school, ambiguously expressing his feelings of powerless sadness, anger, and resentment. So as adults, the mascot clown child, so proficient at mitigating the suffering of others through humor. So many of them, as I said earlier, become entertainers, comedians. But sadly, they never enjoy the happiness they provide for others. So after a lifetime of repressing their own pain, they're likely to suffer from chronic depression. And they've never developed a sense of self, so they will always struggle with feelings of emptiness and loneliness. So let's talk about the fourth one, the mastermind manipulator child. Well, that's pretty much as it sounds, but unlike the other three roles, the mastermind manipulator has no positive virtues. This is a sinister, selfish, and abusive child. And this child controls the family in her cunning way, in her survival, with her survival skills. She's able to cope not through being passive or deflecting, but through manipulation. The mastermind's manipulations are driven by feelings of entitlement, kind of like the narcissist. This child is opportunistic, callous, and is unrelenting when it comes to fulfilling her own needs. But the child, just like the narcissist, is just shrewd enough to operate under the radar. So this child recognizes the dysfunction of the family and uses it to her benefit. She capitalizes on the weaknesses of her family members to get what she wants. And she's very cunning about this. She will lie in wait, create conflict among family members, or pour on insincere charm. She has this innate sense of how to manipulate people, especially the people in charge of her, and also get away with it. So it's interesting because family members, they may catch on to what she's doing, but they're no match for this child. She is the master manipulator. And this is a role that this child will take with her into adulthood. Once a manipulator, always a manipulator. This is the child, you know, this is the one that is, the humor is caustic. It's not soothing. They're making jokes, but they never feel nice. They're always soothing. They're sugar-coated. They're backhanded insults used to cover up their own feelings of insecurity, inadequacy. And because they feel they lack the feeling of emotional safety, they're trying to cover that up as well. And they're well known for saying, "What's the matter with you? Can't you take a joke?" So you may have had a sibling like this in your family who constantly put you down in a way that could never be called, they could never be called on. And when the parents weren't around, they were the ones running the show. And so you may have problems now with these siblings. and you may want a relationship with them. But if you have a sibling who is a manipulator, then chances are you're not going to be able to work through that. It's very sad. You know, so the whole family is upset. The siblings are turned against each other. There's triangulation used. And, you know, when we get older, if we don't have parents that we can talk to, or parents who love us or understand us unconditionally, we want a relationship with our siblings. That's only natural. We're drawn to that. But sometimes we find that that's impossible. This is very, very sad. We lose often a large part of our family, if not the whole thing. And it's very painful and very difficult to reconcile with. But if you want to learn more about this, I elaborate on this greatly in my book, Close Encounters of the Worst Kind, in the chapter Portrait of the Narcissistic Family. I go through all this in that book so that you can read it for yourself. There's, you know, other things, a lot more in the book, but that's just one particular chapter of about the narcissistic family. So I hope that this resonated with some of you. I hope this is what you needed to hear today. It's definitely what I needed to talk about. And I just think it's really important to know what happened to you. It's really important for you to know that. But not as a way to hold on to it, to hold on to your pain and to claim victimization over what happened to you. No, it's to understand what happened so you can rise above it and lift yourself out of it. Please don't use what I said today as a way to fall deeper into your depression or feeling like a victim. Use it to empower you. Use it as a way to understand what you went through and what you have to do to overcome it. Please, take my advice. You want to get better, not worse. And you can. You can get better. And I wish that for you. And I wish you joy and serenity always. Goodbye.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.